This programme is brought to you by the monthly partners of Reasons to Believe. For more information, please visit our website at reasons.org/monthly partner.
Welcome to Imago Dei, engaging minds created in the image of God. This is Average Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples and physicist Dave Rogstad. On today's podcast, we continue with part two of The Problem of Sorrow. Ken, you introduced it last week, and well, here we are again today. There are five stages of grief that you want to introduce us to, so let's talk about it.
Yes, that's exactly right, Joe. I think the way I tackle this topic of death and grief is to see it as part of the problem of pain and suffering. I think that Paul Copan, who is a Christian philosopher who's been on our podcast here at RTB, I like him. He's a careful thinker. Paul Copan has said that there isn't one problem of evil. There are the problems of evil.
We've done podcasts on that topic on the former Straight Thinking, which people can listen to here.
That's right. On TV. More than 300 episodes of Straight Thinking that are still up and available. And I get email from people who say they listen to the program. So all of that is available on RTB's amazing website. Lots of great information. Paul Copan says there's the problems of evil. I think that's right. You know, Hugh Ross talks a lot about what I would call natural evil, natural disasters. You know, and we talk about, is there a trade-off where God makes this world that has so many incredible opportunities for human beings to live out their destiny, but it is a trade-off? Natural disasters have benefits, but they can also be very destructive. Mm-hmm. We also have, natural evil, moral evil, where people do terrible, dastardly things to each other. We see this in crime. We see this in war. But I think it's also important to recognize that all of us die. It's not if, it's when. And what I found very interesting in teaching courses on death and dying is I came across an author that had written in the field. Her name is Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She's written a book entitled On Death and Dying. I've read a number of her books. She's now passed away. She's a psychiatrist, was a psychiatrist. A little bit controversial in some respects. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross became fascinated with near-death experiences, and she began having encounters with spirit beings. Mm. I think that she went off the deep end. I think she embraced a dangerous mysticism, New Age ideas, occultism. I don't recommend her books without qualification. Her books, when it comes to caring for people who are dying, are first rate. Her own spiritual ideas are not Christian. What's interesting is that Kubler-Ross began spending a lot of time with people who had life-threatening illnesses. Visiting them, talking with them, caring for them, observing them. And she began to see that there are what we call the stages or cycles of grief. And these stages are maybe understood to be not only for people who are facing life-threatening illnesses, but also for people who are grieving the loss of loved ones.
Mm-hmm. It's just suffering in general.
Just suffering. And she developed a model. This is a 5-point model. There are others who have 7-point models. I don't think we should, and I don't think Kubler-Ross ever intended for us to see these as following in a strict chronological order, but rather kind of, mental, emotional states that kind of follow a period of grief. I want to mention these, and then I want to talk a little bit about them. The first one is denial. Denial. So, you know, when you hear that...
That's a river in North Africa, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it's no longer a river in Africa.
We're going to hit the eject button.
You're close, Dave. Denial. Something... Sometimes shock precedes the attempt to avoid the inevitable. I mean, you know, you hear the message that you're going to, you have a life-threatening illness, or maybe worse still, your daughter does, your son does, your loved one does. The second one is anger, often a deep sense of inner frustration, you know, why me? Right?
I've seen that at a funeral, by the way.
Yeah.
Somebody acting out at a funeral.
Yeah. Let me stop there and just say, I know Hugh Ross agrees with me on this. I would much rather speak at a funeral than at a wedding. Mm. Not because a wedding's pretty exciting, too. Mm-hmm. Usually young people coming together spend the rest of their life together, and lots of hope and, you know, anticipation, a lot of fun. At a funeral, I like to speak at a funeral because I got a captive audience. Mm-hmm. I got people who are now going to let me talk about the big questions of life. It gives me an opportunity to talk about Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And to wax philosophical and say, look, you know, here we have so-and-so, but that's going to be you in not too long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not if, it's when. Sometimes when people encounter death or they encounter the death of a loved one or the anticipation, they feel a sense of denial, a sense of shock and denial, a sense of anger, why me? Sometimes in anger at God, sometimes in anger at Providence. You know, why is this happening to me? I remember when Jacqueline Kennedy was told that she had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, her first words were, I did everything right. Why is this happening to me? Why is God letting this happen to me? The third is bargaining. Individuals seek an option as a way out of the dilemma. You know, can I negotiate a deal, right? Life is often, let's cut a deal. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can cut a deal with God or with fate or something like that. Fourth is depression, where it's the sorrow and the inevitable kind of hits the person deep. And then fifth is acceptance, when you... you know, the realistic solutions don't pan out, and so you have to prepare for what's ahead. You know, what's interesting about this is it extends beyond death. You know, when people go through a breakup of their marriage, mm-hmm. When somebody loses a job, I kidded some friends that the Lakers went south and haven't won a title. I went through denial and anger, bargaining, depression, and then finally acceptance. These are stages.
Have you really accepted that now?
I think I revert back to denial, right. You know, anger. What's interesting about this is I don't think that these are merely stages of confronting death or confronting our grief about the death of others. I think in some ways, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross has picked up on this general suffering. You know, because a marriage, the end of a marriage can be like a death. Sometimes losing your job can seem like, you know, almost a death. Mm-hmm. People go through, you know, periods of sorrow and periods of grief. And I think there are many places where the gospel, where the Christian worldview can help in these areas. And of course, alluding back to our first program last week, you know, I remember when my brother took his life, I felt a sense of aloneness loneliness. Later, when I faced my own health crisis, I felt fear and anxiety. And Dave and Joe, for me, they all felt like the same thing. Like there was an inner ache of the soul. Mm-hmm. I think that what we see in people who are encountering these stages, they're really kind of entering into the existential challenges of life.
Wrestling with the... I had occasion while we were on our cruise to finish reading a book by Tim Keller called Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering.
Mm.
Great book. I really liked it. And I liked it because he not only tried to deal with sort of the pastoral aspects of how do we help people through these things, but then also covered some of the philosophical issues and then just some of the practical ways that we deal with it. But one of the things that he started out talking about was that in our secular society, people don't have, we don't provide a sort of a viewpoint, a worldview for how to deal with suffering and pain in our life. We live in a society where everybody is kind of like what you were saying earlier about we're healthy, everything is going our way, we've got money in our bank account. We don't need anything. And then when we need something, we got a doctor will give us a drug and we don't deal with it. While other societies and our own society in the past has given us tools for how to deal, how to view suffering in a more positive way as something that it can accomplish something in our life, help us to maybe live, like you said, a more authentic life. Anyway, I just thought the book was really good in dealing with these very things that you're talking about here.
I appreciate that reference, and I like Tim Keller.
Yeah.
I think he kind of represents a kind of a unique person in that he is a pastor, but he's also a very sharp intellectual.
Very thoughtful person.
He's written two books on Christian apologetics and God and reason.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in the Presbyterian, a conservative Presbyterian tradition. I like his work. In fact, I want to touch a little bit on that. Then I want to kind of take these stages apart a little bit and maybe infuse some gospel ideas. You know, Dave, I think that point you made is a very powerful one. I think as I get back to this question of an inner sense of courage. Aristotle, the great Greek philosopher Aristotle said that to develop any kind of virtue, you have to be a courageous person. If you lack courage, all of your virtuous life will unravel. And I don't think that courage is the absence of fear. I remember talking to my dad. How do you function as a gunner in a rifle company in a battle? And he said, "Well, I didn't give a damn anymore. Figure I was going to be dead anyway, so I'm going to do my job. You know, I'm going to protect that next guy right next to me." I think, Dave, that courage is not the absence of fear. I think it's rising above it. I think it's recognizing that there are things that are more important than our own fear, than our own security. And, you know, I think that, I've often thought that I can't just wait for God to zap me with dying grace right before I die. I've thought that, well, maybe the Lord is going to use different experiences in my life to help transform my character and to develop. And I think one thing that's been very positive for me in having a life-threatening illness is immediately when I hear somebody is sick or somebody has a brain illness or somebody has, there's this deep sense of empathy. I know what that feels like. And I know, you know, I have a couple friends right now on Facebook. I don't know that I've ever actually set eyes on these people, but they know me and I've kind of come to know them, and they've had cancer, and, you know, I've been able to send them messages. I mean, here on this kind of impersonal, you know, there are sometimes I look at social media. Now, don't tell anybody here at RTB I said this, but sometimes I wonder, is there an intrinsic moral good when it comes to social media? Sometimes I wonder. But, you know, what's interesting is here I had a guy named David, and he had cancer, and I just felt for him. You know, he was a young guy. He's got young kids, and he put a picture of his kids on Facebook, and I sent him a message, and I said, that's a good reason for you to get well. You know, there's your boy. You know, I've had other friends, and you have that sense of empathy. And if I can get back to why does God let these things happen? Maybe he lets them happen because God, in his infinite wisdom and in his infinite compassion, realizes that this is the way that he can transform people's character and souls.
Mm-hmm.
That he can work in us a sense of care and compassion. And, you know, as we talk about this idea of denial, I think that first stage that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross talks about, denial, is part of what both of you have said, both in this program and in the previous one. Dave, we're not taught that things are going to go bad. In fact, we have a whole evangelical ministry contaminated with the health, wealth, and prosperity gospel, where they tell you that if you don't have a robust bank account, and if you don't have impeccable health, and if you're not healed in everything, then you're not confessing what
something's
you need to confess.
With you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that doesn't work for me, and it doesn't work for the vast majority of people who live in third world countries that face sorrow and pain and high mortality rate. You know, Joe, you said in our earlier show that, you know, death is several decades away. We don't have to think about death. You don't have to go to a cemetery. I've even noticed over the years that I've been alive that Forest Lawn has kind of changed their orientation. I remember when I was a kid, very religious. The orientation was death and eternal life. Christianity. Now I see signs, you know, mom and pop would be, you know, happy if you plant a tree or something like that. And I think, wow, the kind of religious, the kind of existential element has kind of changed. I mean, you know, maybe it's a marketing element. You know, if all you got to sell every day is death, yeah. I guess you got to come up with some yeah. new mechanism.
And they want you to come and have a meal there now, you know, come spend time
yeah.
up there. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. So, you know, this first stage of denial, we don't want to think about death. We don't want to acknowledge it, but the reality is something very different. I mean, I'm 59 years old. I don't think the same way I used to think. I thought when my dad died at 66, my dad was an old man. Boy, I think 66. That's not an old
I'm
man.
I'm already past that by 11 years.
Dave's looking beyond that.
I'm over the hill and down the other side.
It also seems to me that as a part of this process, that some people seem to go to, what's the fifth one again? Acceptance?
Acceptance.
They seem to go to acceptance, but in reality, they might be at number one. That is, you ask them and they say, oh yeah, I've totally accepted it. But it doesn't look like they really have. That is, if you check on them a little bit later, they've begun drinking, or
right.
you know, their appearance is unkempt,
right.
and they, right. you know, they've
trying
they've
to escape lost, some way or other.
Maybe they've lost a job or they've quit or something bad has happened to them.
Yeah.
But they said, oh, yeah, I've accepted, I've moved on. But something bad, they maybe they haven't gone through. And these are not necessarily linear or.
Right.
I think Kubler-Ross has said they could be circular.
They're not chronological
right.
necessarily.
Yeah, that's the word, yeah. But it seems like some people could be lying their way through, mm-hmm. and maybe they haven't processed properly, but they're telling you, yeah, I've gone to five already. So maybe that's where we as Christians mm-hmm. need to come alongside and with these things in mind, check up on people.
And I think in the context of, I've shared this before, but I think the element of sin that really kind of rattles my cage is that sin is not just breaking the commandments, though it is that. It's not just missing the mark that God set up, but what troubles me is when sin can deceive, we can deceive ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think we often live in denial about these big and challenging things. You know, we don't want to, you know, a lot of people don't want to think about financial issues. We don't want to think about, you know, problems maybe we see in our children or in our marriage. You know, we'd rather pretend that God's going to wave a wand and all that's going to go away.
It's funny how many Christians I know, when they go through some big trial or anticipate some big trial, then they hope that the Lord will come. Maybe he'll come before I have to go through this or face this problem. I've got a question for you, Ken. Earlier you had said that one of the hopes that you had as an outcome of reflecting on death is that you could live a more authentic life.
Yeah.
What are the things that you're thinking of? What are the things that are going to be more authentic as a result of...
Yeah. That's a good question. I appreciate you asking that question. I think what I have in mind there, Dave, is, you know, life... Life has a lot of pressures. It goes by quickly. I think one of the challenges probably that all of us have, I know I certainly have it, is, you know, the really important things in life get covered with the busyness, the things that, you know, that happen. I mean, one of the things that I want in my life is I want my wife to know that I love her, that I cherish her, that the vow that I made to her, I mean it. There are times where I think I need to spend more time of my life to this deep personal commitment that I made to this woman named Joan. I feel that way as a father, you know, lots of pressures. I mean, I look at the books that I've written on my shelf and I say, well, there's those years and there's those years. You know, working, I feel a deep obligation. I have a strong work ethic and I think that work is important. I think God calls us to work. He called people to work, Adam to work before the fall. And yet life I can be pulled in all these different directions. I want my kids to know that, you know, I really deeply care about them. That, you know, as I was sharing with my son not long ago, I said, you know, son, a significant part of my fulfillment in life is knowing that you're successful in life. Part of my happiness mm-hmm. is knowing you're happy. Mm-hmm. You are my life. You are part of my life. I guess I'm thinking there, Dave, that by thinking about death, I won't take my wife for granted. I won't take the time that I have, the people that I have. You know, who was it? I think it was Aristotle who said the cure for 100 enemies is one friend. I don't want to take my friendships. C.S. Lewis says friends are a type of love. I'm hoping by recognizing my mortality that I will pick up the really important things in my life, and I'll realize I don't have all the time in the world.
Reorder your loves, I think, was a phrase you've used in the past.
Yeah, yeah. And I think recognizing our limits, I think recognizing our mortality, recognizing our neediness in life, you know, it's easy to be 50 or 60 years old and look around and say, where is it gone? What have I really done with it? Have I really lived a life that I meaningfully want to? And you know what? To be committed to Christ, to be committed to the triune God, to be committed to our spouses, to be committed to our Christian faith, to our friends, to our family, it takes a lot of sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think reflecting upon death and my own finitude, my own boundaries, my own limitations, you know, I'm not the person who finds it easy to say to my loved ones, I love you, to hold their hand mm-hmm. and tell them. But you know what? I've determined that the things that I missed in with my parents, that I'm going to try to incorporate those kinds of things so that...
These are important.
Yeah.
As you've been sharing, I just was reflecting over decisions that I made back when I was in my early 30s about what direction my career I would pursue.
Yeah.
And I guess in a sense, what I was thinking about was, at the end of my life, what am I going to get joy out of? Is it going to be out of because I wrote one more paper, or I was acknowledged by one more professor in a academic environment? Or was it that my kids were following the Lord, kind of like what you're just saying?
Yeah.
And so I made choices back then that sort of, went away from pursuing an academic career and instead trying to pursue a career that would allow me to have more opportunity to do those things that you've just described of relating to your kids, relating to what God would maybe have me to do, being able to share the gospel, those kinds of things. So in a sense, those are reflecting on death. I mean, I never thought much about that I was reflecting on death, but that's really what you're doing. You're thinking about, at the end of the game, what's going to give you joy? What are you going to feel satisfied over?
And I think that, you know, I've been on a gurney staring at the ceiling,
right,
thinking that, you know, I didn't have long to live. And you know what? I wasn't thinking of, am I going to write a book that's going to win a Nobel Prize? Or, you know, am I going to sell more books than Hugh Ross or William Lane Craig? I was thinking, you know, does this woman that I'm married to, does she know how deeply I love her and care for her? Do my kids know that their dad is on their side?
There's an integrity there too in the kind of life that you're leading. That's
and I think that reflecting upon death also shakes us up. I mean, it is, Joe, it is easy to live your life in diversion, you know, to kind of get away from it. And I have a story for you. After I recovered from my illness, I think a year or two afterwards, I thought was almost a relapse, and my wife took me to the emergency room, and I thought, you know, I don't know, I feel strange. I have a heartbeat that I can't seem to slow it down. I wondered if I was having a heart attack. I wondered if, well, to be perfectly candid, I thought maybe I was having a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And because I thought, well, maybe, you know, that brain has been affected. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the emergency room. And, of course, you know, these wonderful medical facilities where they make you hurry up and wait, you know.
Yeah.
And you have lots of time to philosophize. Mm-hmm. I'll grant them that. But I discovered the doctor came to my wife and said, you know, he didn't have a stroke. He's not having a heart attack. I think your husband had an anxiety experience. And here I'm thinking, wow, you know, here I am, the courageous guy, mm-hmm. and I've had an anxiety disorder. I mean, if I'll tell you, when you have it, you feel like you're dying. Mm-hmm. There's hardly any difference. You feel like, man, this is very difficult. But I remember they kept me overnight for observation, and they put me in a particular room where there were some people that were close to death. And I couldn't sleep because there was a lady in the room who couldn't catch her breath.
Ooh.
And her daughter came, and she was very close to death. And then I looked over my shoulder, and I saw another guy. He looked like, you know, he was on his last leg. And I thought to myself, man, this is not pleasant. Mm. This, you know, and I started thinking to myself, maybe philosophy is over. You know, why do I want to think about all this stuff? You know, I just want to go home and pretend none of it happened, none of it's important. You know, I can understand people want their lives to go well. They want everything to be happy. Joe, I can understand why somebody would say, why do I pick up a podcast and hear Ken Samples yammer about death? You know, there's a lot of other things I can listen to. Well, I could tell you there are times where it is very, very difficult. But when it comes right down to it, the thing that means the most to us in our life is our faith. It is our relationship with God. And God does allow us to suffer. And he promises that he brings good out of suffering. He promises that his grace is there. And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people, and I've written books and articles, and I've made all of these declarations of the Christian life, and I try to live out those ideas. I try to come to grips with those ideas, and I know there are people who go through denial. I mean, who wants to accept that your loved one is going to die? You know, I've been afraid a few times in my life. My wife was the victim of a crime, and I fought the man who attacked her. Here I am in a dark alley at midnight, wrestling on the street, and I'm wondering, you know, does he have a weapon? I felt afraid. I felt afraid when I thought I was going to die. I'll tell you, I felt afraid when my daughter had a mysterious illness, and the doctor came to me and said, you need to go and talk with her. I had another patient with this rather mysterious symptoms, and she died. Mm. And I remember this paralysis of thinking, I can't lose Jacqueline. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And we make deals. Bargaining, I mean, I make deals with God. I say, Lord, I don't like suffering, but you know what? Don't give it to Sarah, Jackie, and Mike. Will give it to me. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
If there's suffering to do, I'll take it. Don't put it on them. But in my more reflective moments, I know they have to face these things.
Mm-hmm.
They have to come to grips with a life of suffering and faith in God. Denial, anger. Why does this happen? Why does it happen to me? You know, these are things that we have to deeply trust the Lord, that he is a providential God. You know, we have lots of debates. Sometimes I wonder, why can't Christians get along a little bit better? Why do we kind of gravitate toward our theological schools and spat with each other and fight with each other when we have so much in common? So small things set us apart. But, you know, there is the Calvinism-Arminianism debate. I can only tell you, maybe the Arminians are right about some of their criticisms of Reformed theology. I don't think so, but maybe they are. But I can tell you, when I was really sick, I held on to the fact that God was sovereign.
He's in control.
He's in control. I don't know why he let this happen, but I, you know, Romans 8:28, that's a verse I can hold on to. God is for me, who can be against me? And so the idea that God was in control of everything and he was the sovereign ruler, rather than, you know, that being viewed as God's not loving, I saw it as a great sense of a source of encouragement and strength that all the wisdom I could bear couldn't seem to figure out all these things. And I remember being in my hospital room and having doubts. I remember one time I thought, what if Christianity isn't true? What if death is the end? Or what if another religion is true? What if I wake up and Allah's looking, and he's read my chapter about Islam? And then slowly and gradually, I went back to some of the apologetic arguments that I've been presenting for 30 years about the resurrection, about the person of Jesus Christ, about the rationality and the design and the purpose in the universe. And slowly, these ideas and ultimately Scripture. So yeah, we feel a sense of denial. We feel a sense of anger. But that's where we can come and share with people that these things that we believe about God, this is not the end. This is not the only world. This isn't even the most important world. There's going to be, we're going to come into the presence of God. You know, I alluded to this passage in an earlier show. Let me see if I can find it here. This is one of my favorite. I remember this is one of the first passages I ever memorized. It's from John 11, 20, verses 25 through 27. This is, of course, Lazarus dying. Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world." I mean, those are powerful statements about facing death. And so, yeah, we have, we face denial, we face anger. You know, we face bargaining. You know, we make deals with the Lord, or we may try to make deals with medicine. You know, I remember when Steve Jobs was sick, you know, go to India, go over here, get this.
Go to Mexico.
Go to Mexico, get all of these types of things. Well, as Walter Martin used to say, the General Patton of Christian apologetics, he used to say, there's one illness in which you won't recover, your last one. you know, we want a bargain, and I want to say something about that, because I think it's important for Christians to realize that we believe in natural cures and we believe in supernatural cures. I remember seeing a doctor who asked me about my illness. And he said, "So you are cured." And I had another doctor look at my chart, and I remember him saying to me, "Man, somebody must have been looking after you." And I thought, wow, doctors aren't supposed to say things like that. But, you know, medicine is a gift of God's providence. God can cure me by medication, and that's still God curing me. That's God's world. That's God's wisdom. That's God's providential care. Certainly nothing wrong when somebody is going through a difficult time to ask the Lord, "Lord, can you intervene in a special way? Can you heal? Will you heal? You know, I pray according to your will."
That's the case of the frustrating thing, is that God doesn't always do what we would like him to do.
That's right. That's exactly
right. He has the power, but he doesn't.
That's exactly right, and I think that is another part, Joe, of how important theology is, how important it is to know the attributes of God, God's love, God's compassion, God's power, God's authority, so that when the storm comes and we're tempted to, you know, to despair, to be caught in the cycle of grief, we can fall back on the ideas that, well, wait a second. God is not a man. God is not a mere creature. God is the creator of the universe. God works all things together for good. If God's on my side, who can be against me? God has a greater purpose.
Yeah.
I remember one Catholic priest saying to me many years ago when my brother died, death is the ultimate healing. And I thought, what? What does that mean? And I've come to believe that, you know, the sorrow is the sorrow we feel, but the people who go on to be in the presence of God, you know, they're at home with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Their time of to be in the presence of God has come. Depression. Joe, you made the comment that, you know, people who get depressed, they lose interest in, you know, maybe they have pastimes that they like. They lose interest in those things. They, you know, the depression begins to affect the way they dress, the way they appear. That's a difficult time. Grief can weigh heavily, mentally and emotionally. You know, there is a sorrow. You know, but this is also a time where we can offer words of encouragement. We can bring a meal. You know, we can come alongside. And maybe all we can say, I mean, I've often thought, what do you say to people that are going through sorrow? And I thought, you know, I'm sorry for your loss. I mean, it doesn't seem like much. But, you know, it is an honest acknowledgement that I'm sorry for the loss that you're presently experiencing. You know, that might be all there needs to be. When my brother died, I kind of wish somebody would have maybe taken my hand. I know my mother tried. But I felt that aloneness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, well, Lord, you've allowed some of these things that I've experienced. Maybe I can use them. Maybe I can teach them. Maybe I can practice them. Maybe I can help. You know, and then acceptance. You know, these are difficult things. But again, we go to the words of the Apostle Paul. This is 1 Corinthians 15, a resurrection chapter. Paul says, listen, I tell you a mystery. We will not all sleep, but we will be changed in a flash, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. For the perishable must clothe itself with the imperishable, and the mortal with immortality. When the perishable has been clothed with the imperishable, and the mortal with immortality, then the saying that is written will come true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, He gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. I mean, these are great, powerful promises. And, you know, you can live your life in delusion. You can live it in diversion. And, you know, it would be nice not to have to worry about death and illness. And it'd be nice if we had all the money in the world. And it'd be nice if, you know, we could take limitless vacations. But, you know, I love vacations. I love entertainment. But you know what? I've never really learned anything profound from them. But when it comes to suffering, it's chocked full of lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, coming back, Dave, to that point of I want to live a more authentic life. I want to challenge myself, you know, to I recently, we had a party here. It's my 20th year at RTB. The ladies here put on a really nice time, and I remember I was telling my wife afterwards, you know, there are people saying, well, you know, a thing I really appreciate about Ken is his deep commitment to his wife and to his family. And I told my wife, I said, I felt convicted. I felt like I need to work harder.
Yeah.
You know, I think that life is very short. Life goes by very quickly. These are great truths of life, death, and resurrection. And I think the time we spend reflecting about these issues can help us respond to the challenges of our faith. Namely, God has good purposes in all these things. God is going to bring sorrow to an end. He's mm-hmm. going to take all the crooked things, Joe, and make them straight. The Lord is going to be a judge, too, and he's going to confront all the wickedness mm-hmm. that has been done. And there's going to be no more sickness, no more sorrow. Those are robust things. Christianity is a philosophy. It is a Weltanschauung, as the Germans like to call it, that gives you hope and purpose, and it gives you a reason not to give in to death by despair. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a lot of young people in our country who have a lot to live for, but they don't seem to have a philosophy of life that gives them that sense of hope and mm-hmm. purpose. And I want to close this show as well by saying this. You know, it's very important also to reach out when you're hurting. If you're going through grief, if you're going through sorrow, if you're going through a difficult time, talk with your doctor. You know, talk with your pastor. Reach out and ask for people to help. And, you know, we need to do more of these things in our churches where we actually help people to know how to go out. I mean, one of the great things about Christianity is Christians respond. You know, they build hospitals. They build orphanages. They gather food. You know, when there's a natural disaster, they pump food out there and they want to help feed people. We also need to have some of the ability to comfort, encourage, mm-hmm. you know, instruct. Maybe every church needs a philosopher to kind of help them reflect about the deep things of life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. that's the topic that I have been addressing in a series that's available on Reflections, calling it The Big Questions of Life, Death, and Grief. And I want to deal one more show, Joe. Next week, I want to look at a few other things that relate to Christian theology about the next life. And there I'm going to be referring to Christian Endgame, that little booklet that I wrote a couple years ago.
All right. We will pick it up again. Thank you for those thoughts, Ken. We will look into that some more. We want to refer people again to Ken's blog, reflectionsbyken.wordpress.com. There's always an excellent article there, available weekly. All right.
Remember Tim Keller's book. Mm-hmm. It's also a great resource on this whole question of...
Yeah, what was the name of that one again?
It's called Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. Mm.
Okay, thank you for that one, Dave. For Ken Samples and Dave Rogstad, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Imago Dei.
We'd like to thank our monthly partners for making this broadcast possible. If you're not a monthly partner or would like information about becoming one, please go to reasons.org/monthly partners. Also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where you can join the conversation about the latest scientific discoveries, headlines, and their apologetic value.